Hey, this is Vincent from Dina Shattenkirk's Talk Popsy event, and I'm here today speaking with
Mia.
Mia, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So today we were thinking of talking maybe a little bit about censorship.
Okay.
A lot of topics to go through here. I mean, maybe there's a tiered level. Maybe national conversation should be censored. Maybe public conversation should be censored. There's some things we shouldn't say. We shouldn't yell fire in a movie theater. Right? Shouldn't do that. What do you think? What do you think?
I think, censorship is a pretty complex subject with many different settings or types of audiences that it could be discussed in. I think that on a national level, or at least in the domestic sphere, that could be a good starting point. What do you think? What do you think the role of censorship should be on the national level?
That's a good question. Yeah.
In the U.S. for a starting point. We can talk about other countries.
What do I think the role should be? My first inclination was to say maybe divisive things should be censored. But then on the other hand, maybe what makes our society so important is that we're able to have disagreements and still maintain unified. So I'm starting to not think that anymore. What do you think?
Well, I think one interesting piece to me is who's doing the censorship and where it's coming from. Yeah. So do you think, for you, is there a distinction between sort of, let's say, external or like government instituted or led censorship versus more self-censorship?
Mm.
Like, is one better or worse, or is one less nefarious than another?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. So
or
I mean,
how different are they?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, if the government does not explicitly censor us, but conditions us to self-censor ourselves, maybe that's. Can you think of any self? So a thing that came up in a previous conversation was using therapy and psychoanalysis as a tool or thinking about what's happening in a therapy session as us unself-censoring ourselves. And if you have the psychoanalytic perspective about these like very specific things that have to do with like your parents or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like us unself-censoring ourselves about those topics and being able to talk about them in a safe space, you know, because with a therapist there's something safe about it.
Mm-hmm.
That form of self-censorship seems very interesting to me. Also, the government one is a little more like heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
They just say like, this book is banned.
Mm-hmm.
A little more heavy-handed, but also interesting. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I think that your point about therapy is interesting. Do you think that self-censorship like can be undone or ought to be undone through therapy or otherwise? So I guess first question, should it be undone? And then second, first question, can it be undone? Second question, should it be?
I mean, I feel like it could. Probably should not in every case though, right? Like if you just have, if you have this like stream of consciousness of desires, you shouldn't just be like shouting out everything you say, right?
Mm-hmm.
It should be like some of the stuff you should censor, even just for, right? Or like a poker player shouldn't say like, well, I think these are my odds of winning, right? Because the whole point is the private information. So there's definitely cases where it shouldn't be, but what got brought up is that, you know, maybe this thesis of psychoanalysis that undoing these bits of self-censorship actually benefits you or helps you in some way.
Like in what ways?
It's like letting yourself think these like scary thoughts that are taboo, scary, what do you think about all this?
That makes me wonder, like, I guess topically, what we censor in that case. So what you're saying, like work with a therapist, for instance, it might be maybe self-censorship regarding a on sensitive subjects like well, let me take a step back. I guess I'm curious maybe what censorship means then, or just being clear on what it is, what if there's like a unified or an agreed upon definition of it, because I think maybe working, for instance, with a therapist on being less rigid or worried about talking about like a particular personal subject is different than censorship or self-censorship with regard to like political views or views on like more social or cultural views. So like curious what you think.
Well, what do you have in mind for like self-censorship in this other sense?
Like a more personal sense or more
the non-therapy style?
Oh, like, non-therapy.
What were you thinking?
I guess what comes to mind first is just being critical of the government. I think that's probably the most common type of censorship that there is, whether it's like government imposed or self imposed. So for instance, being critical of like a particular ideology or being critical of policies and programs the government's implementing, or like for instance, like in China, maybe like attitudes or programs with regard to like Tibet or like minorities and like areas like I'm blanking on the name, but like the Uyghur population in China, like in northwest China. So like just like those types of things.
So
like
the
policies and programs are.
But do you mean also like the people consciously saying we don't talk about that sort of thing though, and self-censoring in that way? Is that what you, or are you talking about the
government imposed? No, you're right. Like people, I think, self-censoring with regard to those types of topics, not like more personal ones,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
Okay,
so just trying to figure out like what we mean by censorship.
Yeah.
Is it both of those things, or is it?
I mean,
just one.
My hunch is that we could talk about them in the same breath, but you know, qualify one as self-censorship. And I think you brought up a really interesting distinction, which is, you know, there's this like, you know, maybe subconscious, according to the hypothesis of psychoanalysis, right? Subconscious self-censorship. But then there's this other sort of thing where like, you know, maybe one will like privately entertain a certain political belief, but not air that political belief for fear of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think that has a negative effect? And so a thing that came up in the previous discussion is that like, maybe it's important that people are able to air beliefs, talk about them, reject them, you know, move on from them, revise them, and we are these people who are constantly changing. I mean, like your beliefs are not the same as they were. Maybe. I don't know. Actually, I don't know you. I just met you. So I assume
hopefully
your beliefs are not
yeah.
the same as they were like 10 years ago,
yeah.
but who knows? You know, like mine certainly aren't. So how do we make room for that? Especially in the age of, you know, if you write something, so this conversation, for example, is recorded. If you write something on like social media, it'll just be there forever.
Mm.
Right? So it's something about that keeps us a little bit stuck. Maybe, but maybe, I don't know, I said a lot of things.
So it sounds like one aspect of what you're saying is what's the role of censorship, or is it good or is it bad in like your ability to have dynamic or evolving beliefs? I mean, that's an interesting question. I think that being able to express them, so I guess like less censorship or no censorship, is useful in maybe self-exploration of your beliefs, so that you kind of have it be, whether it's through a conversation that's not documented or whether it's online where it is documented, for instance, it could be personally useful to have that sort of like history, I guess, of what you currently believe and then what you used to believe, just for your own personal benefit. I think that generally, you know, I guess in working out what you believe to be true, or like how that, or a position that you have over time, like less censorship would be better, because then you have the benefit of having a chance to speak with someone who would maybe like challenge that belief, yeah, or have a different take on it. And so I guess censorship in that regard is harmful to like trying to achieve a position or like a sense of like what's true.
And so I certainly see this too on, and what do you think about the permanence of the internet, right? So like, if we were just having, if, you know, someone and the friend just has a conversation walking in the park that's not recorded anywhere, that's just a thing that is there and then gone after that, right? There's no permanence to it. If you type a view and post it on Twitter, that's attached to your name for eternity now, right? Maybe there's going to be a bunch of, you know, other things attached to your name also, so that'll get kind of lost, but it is still there.
Yeah, I guess maybe what I'm thinking now, it sounds like it's in opposition to what I said a few minutes ago, which is like it's useful to have like a record, I guess, of like what you've thought like as time passes, so that you can refer to it, or it's like useful maybe as like a tool in the evolution of your thinking. But I guess my reaction to what you just said is that I don't know if it's so much, I guess less, I don't know if it's so much tied to censorship, but I think that it's freer, it feels freer to me to be able to like think out loud or talk through an issue or like with someone about it where I know that it's not being captured, of course, right?
Yeah.
I think we'd all like probably feel that way. I don't know, like where do you think the role of censorship comes into play there though?
Well, yeah, so I definitely think...
Maybe some self-censorship in that sense. Like, people are... Like, a hesitancy to... Whether it's published or not, hesitancy to...
I mean,
challenge,
I think,
ideas.
Right, there's got to be some space to... You know, you think of, like, you know, being a little kid, and, like, you just say, like, I want this thing... You know, and then eventually you learn that, like, hey, you don't get everything you want, so you just stop saying it. You know, maybe part of socialization seems to be some of this, like, especially when you're, like, my friend just had a baby, and, like, you know, what she does is she, like, she just kind of cries, and then, like, they try a couple things, and then when they, like, figure out the thing that the baby wants, the baby starts crying. So, like, and it's like, obviously it's not clear because she's not speaking, she's just crying. She's very new. But it seems like maybe part of our socialization is like not doing that every single time we want something, learning to wait, learning to express it, learning to say it a little bit more clearly, right? Than just being this kind of like conduit of, you know, desires, just immediately expressing them, right? So there seems to be some sort of role here, and this, to me, this does seem positive, right? Imagine if like every time we had a thought, we just said 100% of our thoughts. That would be, that'd be a, I mean, maybe,
yeah, what do you think would happen if people did that?
I think it would be a very off-putting world. Yeah. And people would recoil from each other, you know, with like, how would you ride the subway like that? Right.
Right.
Like, just hearing 100 other thoughts every second.
Where do you think we draw lines?
Where do we draw lines?
Or make decisions about what, how much to share and what not, how much to not.
That's a good question. Where do we draw lines?
And, like, are we aware of drawing them?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's, some of it seems like it's from the socialization. Are we aware of drawing them? Probably not always, right? Probably some of these lines we learn. My guess, probably there's some things that, you know not to talk about. So, for example, like, I don't know, I I don't know, like at the when you're at the beach, you don't talk about like shark attacks loudly, you know?
Right.
But maybe you talk about shark attacks when you're not at the beach.
Uh-huh.
And maybe this is like a little bit of understanding the context and culture. When you go to the theme park, you know, you don't talk about like amusement park accidents,
mm-hmm.
right? But you maybe talk about it after or before. So maybe there's some sort of context here. I think we learn it. One is too much. I don't know. It's hard to think of what would make something. No, so it is easy to think of, I think, times where it's we censor ourselves too much. Like, you know, people want something in a relationship and they're unable to say it. And that seems like a bad form of self-censorship,
mm-hmm.
right? They're unable to say it for some reason about the dynamic or whatever, but that seems like a bad thing. Why do we do it? Is there a general rule for when it's too much? I don't know. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, do you think that it comes up only then, like, in the form of self-censorship in, like, interpersonal dynamics? Or would it... I'm having a hard time thinking of a time where it would come up in an external... like, in a broader context. Like, I can't think of an example where the government or some kind of external, like, body would say, oh, you've gone too far with the self-censorship or the censorship.
Well, I mean, like, what if... So you're saying you're having a hard time thinking of a case where the government would say, we have gone too far with self-censoring?
Yeah, or even just censorship, maybe, generally. Because what I think what you were saying, and I'm tracking, like, on a sort of interpersonal level, or, like, resonating where you might realize, like, when it's appropriate or not, or how much it's appropriate or not to, like, censor yourself in, like, a social setting or, like, in a relationship setting. Just trying to think of, like, other settings that are broader, I guess, in context where you might feel that way, or, like, how you would get those signs.
I mean, obviously, would this be a sort of example? You tell me. So imagine if, like, everyone was afraid to vote. If people were afraid to vote. So that, you know, while it might in fact make politicians very happy, because maybe they don't want us to participate in democracy, ideally they should not be happy with that.
That's an interesting example. Yeah. I buy that.
Yeah.
What do you think about the... So my understanding is, like, the U.S. has, like, much freer free speech laws than, like, maybe some other, like, Western cultures, like in Europe, for instance. So maybe there would be, like, less censorship in the U.S. about, let's say, like, hate speech or something like mm-hmm. that than in Western Europe. What do you think of that? Do you think that that's, like, a benefit? Do you think that we have it right? Or do we not? In our, like, degree of lesser censorship. Maybe not everyone would agree that we even, like... I mean, I think censorship is, like, an issue in this country, but, like, I think there's, like, freer speech laws here than elsewhere. So do you think we have it right?
It's hard to say. For me, it's hard to say. I feel like this is a... So maybe... The way that I would want to answer that question is by, like, looking at some data, if, like, people are, you know, more prosperous or by some metric, you know, by doing this. That's what I would want to look at. My own personal philosophical hunch is to try not to limit speech. Try not to limit speech. I like this, like, not saying fire in a theater, like this example, I understand, like not causing chaos unnecessarily. But maybe other than this, my personal view is to try not to, is my inclination is to not do so without a good reason. And I could be convinced for good reasons, but what I personally would look for is, yeah, some sort of argument like this. Yeah.
And why?
Yeah.
Well, why do you feel that way?
Why do I feel that way? because I don't know. I think it's good for people to discuss their ideas. I think it's a necessary condition for, you know, rationality, that we be able to discuss things. We should be able to reject, we should be able to talk about views so we can reject them, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Now you ask the hard question.
I mean, I agree that people should, right, like, I think that people should be free to have difficult conversations, and it is usually a benefit to have that freedom in order to make, to get it, like, the best answer,
yeah,
or, like, the best position, or, like, best, like, the truest position, or, like, the most thought-out position, I guess, and it can be dynamic in that sense, too. I think where I struggle, though, is on some substantive boundaries, I guess. Like, for instance, like, how much to allow for speech that is just, like, hateful, or that by and large most people would agree is not, that is harmful, and that is, like, not something that is worthy, I guess, of debating.
Yeah.
And, like, what that is, I mean, then that becomes hard to define. It seems like in the U.S. we're more liberal of that, and I'm not sure always, I guess, what the best role, or what the role of censorship ought to be in that sphere. Like, who should make the decisions as to, like, what's permissible and what's not, and on what level? Like, do you have any?
Well, obviously, the philosophers.
Yeah.
The philosophers think, yeah.
Obvious answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Easy. You know, Plato got it right. No. Just kidding. But, this is a very, it's a very difficult question. What characterizes that category?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I agree with you. I feel able to point out that category. I feel able to point out members of that category when I see it. It's hard to say what unifies it, what unifies the category. So I do agree with you. This is why, the initial thing I thought of with the first question you asked was this argument, similar to one from The Republic, which says the worst thing is civil war, because, a city should grow so large until it would be dividing itself, because civil war is the worst. So maybe there's stuff about, maybe there's a way to characterize this with thinking about division, anywhere, this is an idea.
Like, the outer boundary would just be where a nation would be in great division with itself?
Maybe this is an answer to the question of what,
or, like, a group.
What characterizes what's, like, wronged and unifying about those hate speech cases? Maybe it's something that's, like, very divisive.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe,
it's a good suggestion. Yeah. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Do you have any hunches about how to characterize that category?
I guess it's a hard one. Not any defined ideas, no. So I'm sort of thinking out loud. But maybe if it's something like that is sort of unequivocally harmful or derogatory about a person's, like, race or sex or religious views or something like that. But I know that, I guess I acknowledge that that's not as easy to define as it sounds. We all have different ideas about where the line is for that. So I don't know. No, I don't.
Well, yeah, so,
another day.
It's okay. I don't know either, so, yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking with us.